All right. Well, thank you for the introduction, Cliff. Thank you guys for letting me come here and, you know, not sing. That's not normally how it goes. You invite the guy who was on The Voice and then he doesn't sing, you know, you're kind of going out on a limb there. So thank you. I'm gonna tell you my story. If you know anything about me, that's probably the thing that you know is that it's been almost 10 years now. I was on the show The Voice and somehow ended up winning it, and it was a crazy experience. This story is not going to be a lot about that. You'll hear a little bit about that, but it's mostly just about the ups and downs of the faith journey that I've been on. I'm going to tell you the story, and then I'm going to try to kind of tie it up a little bit at the end and say a little bit about what looking back it says to me and maybe what it could say to you. I was born into a family that was all about church. My mom and dad were young when they had me. They were really affected by the Jesus movement that started in the early 70s with Calvary Chapel. They just had that movie about that, the Jesus Revolution, and it kind of spread across the country. My mom and dad were in a band that was doing that kind of music back in the early 70s, and it was called God's Squad. Yes, it was. So you have to forgive them. They were still figuring that stuff out. You know, it was early in the contemporary Christian music days. They ended up getting divorced when I was like 2. I don't even remember them being married, but they both stayed very involved in my life. Both continued to be very involved in their churches. Very much Christianity was the center of what they did, and I grew up with that. And I was at church on Sunday morning. I was at church on Sunday night. I was at church on Wednesday night. If there was something else going on at church, I was there for that too. Like, church was it, and it gave me some security. It gave me, you know, I was kind of back and forth between my mom's and my dad's, and so there was this, it was kind of this thing that I could hold on to that was a constant in my life, and I decided early on that if this is the important thing, if Christianity and church and believing in God was the important thing, then I was going to be the best at it that I could be. I was going to be a Christian champion or something like that. I don't know. I was going to win the Christianity contest. And so I was all in as a kid and up through my teens. I was involved in the youth group, got involved in like my state youth planning committee and was a part of putting the youth convention together, and I did all that stuff. Excuse me. And after I got out of high school, it was like, okay, what do I do now, God? I want you to tell me what to do. I just want to do work for you, and you just tell me, and I'll go do it. And I waited, and I didn't hear anything, so I didn't know whether to go to college. I took a year off and just really prayed and said, show me what you want me to do. And one night, while I was in that year off of school, I was in my bedroom at my house there in the parsonage of the church where my stepdad was a pastor, same church he's still a pastor of to this day in Virginia. And I was reading my Bible. I think I was in the book of John. I don't remember that 100%. It's not important to the story, though. So, but I think I was reading the book of John. And I stopped for a minute to just think and pray and kind of meditate on what I had been reading. Maybe a minute or two. And just, if you can imagine, I was laying on my bed, like kind of on my stomach, on my elbows, you know, and the Bible was spread out in front of me. And I closed my eyes, opened my eyes back up, went back to looking to the Bible, and it was on a different page, like 60, 70 pages away from where it had been, which it's a little bit weird. So now, even as a person of faith who was just all in on religion and the church that I grew up with, I still was just a naturally very skeptical, logical person. And so pages changing in my Bible wasn't something I was just going to be like, oh, that's God. I was going to be like, what's the explanation for this? So I went and I grabbed a chair and pulled it over, and I stood up on it, and I reached up to my vent on my ceiling, and I was like, is that... It is on, but it's not really doing anything to the pages. Is my fan? No, my fan's not on. What else? I went and laid back down on the bed and was like, kind of like bumping the Bible. And I, you know how like some books, you have to like hold them open, right? Or they're gonna, you're gonna lose your page. But like this was like the big like Oxford annotated study Bible that was just like open, like it was just there, like it wasn't gonna just shift. So 60, 70 pages away, I was like, okay, I can't seem to explain this away, so I'm gonna start reading. And I read, and something just kind of jumped out at me, like it was highlighted, but it wasn't. And it was Paul in the book of Acts giving an account of his conversion experience to King Agrippa. And these were the words that stood out to me that night. It was Acts 26, 16 through 18. It says, "But get up and stand on your feet, for I have appeared to you for this purpose, to appoint you to serve and testify to the things in which you have seen me and to those in which I will appear to you. I will rescue you from your people and from the Gentiles to whom I am sending you, to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, so that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me." That's what I read, and it was like, okay, yes, this is it. This is God calling me. This is the thing I've been waiting for. Now I know what to do. Now I know what my purpose is, and I was ready to go, and I was like, all right, just show me what you want me to do. How do I do this thing? How do I, you know, get up and stand on my feet and go tell people and testify to the things in which you've seen me? You just let me know how to do it, and once I know, I will go do it. And I waited, and nothing happened. And I waited, and my year off of school turned into 2 years off of school, and I lived at home, and I led my youth group and just kept kind of doing the things that I had been doing, and just waited and waited, and nothing. It was just silence. And, you know, after that, as that second year was drawing to a close, I realized, I don't think my parents probably want me to stay here much longer. They're going to start charging me rent pretty soon. It's probably time to do something. And so like any good Church of God kid who grew up in the Church of God and who had some musical ability, I went to Anderson University, because that's what you do. I knew about Sandy Patty, and I knew about Stephen Curtis Chapman, and I knew the Gaithers were up here. So it's like, well, maybe this is it, right? I've always heard about this. I don't know what to do. So I went to Anderson University. Rolled up here to audition for a scholarship, for a vocal performance scholarship, and the bank on the corner, it was late at night, and the bank had one of those like digital thermometers, and it said 4 on it. And I grew up in Florida, had only lived in Virginia for a couple years, and then I came up here and it was 4. I was like, I'm getting out of here as soon as I possibly can. And here I am, you know, whatever, 20 whatever years later. But I auditioned, got in with a vocal performance scholarship, dropped that within the first semester because I knew I didn't want to sing classical music. And I got here and I thought, well, I'm going to start working the plan, right? The plan is clearly to become a Christian musician, like rock star. And I'll reach people through that, because, you know, that makes sense to me. I was 18, 19 years old, and I just assumed that everybody that I would meet here in Indiana at Anderson University would have like-minded. They'd have grown up the same way I did, and they'd believe all the same things I did. And some of the first people I met were part of the choir at the chorale at Anderson, and realized right away that they had a lot more questions than I had, and they didn't believe all the same things I did. And I started having conversations with people about those kind of things. And you have to understand, like I said, my goal as a kid, as a teenager, I had decided, well, I'm going to be the best at this that I can possibly be. If Christianity is what I'm supposed to do, then I'm going to do it better than everybody else. And so one part of that in my rational, logical, skeptical brain was to have all the right arguments. So I read all the apologetics. I read all the like arguments for God, and I knew it all, and I had it all. I was going to win every argument. It didn't matter, so I was good. Unfortunately, I started having these arguments with myself in my own head, and some of it started breaking down, and I was like, well, I mean, I started having questions about the Bible, and like, well, how do I know that this is even something I need to believe in? I mean, this is one book, and I read this other book, and this guy says that we shouldn't even believe in this because we don't have good evidence for it. And then I started thinking about other people who believed other things, and like, do I really want to believe that like anybody who just doesn't believe this thing is going to spend eternity in fire and suffering? Like, I don't know. And I started, and it was just everything started breaking down for me. And I came to a place in that doubt where if I was going to be honest with myself and if I was going to be consistent, and that was important to me, I had to let it all go. And now deconstruction is a real big word these days. And I think that there are a lot of people who have to go through that. But that wasn't a word back then. People didn't talk about deconstruction in the mid-90s. And so I didn't know about that. And so what I did was, I like to say, more like demolition than deconstruction. I didn't kind of like try to take things apart and put them back together. I just tore the whole thing down because I couldn't see how to make it work. The whole foundation was falling out from under it anyway. The arguments that I thought I had built up that were foolproof were falling apart in my mind. And so I just started from scratch, and I made a deal with whatever, with God that I didn't know if I believed in, and said, if you're out there, if you are, then show me. But here's the thing, I just want truth, and I don't care what the truth is. I just want to believe the true thing, whatever that is, you know? And that was the deal. And that's the path that I started going down. And I remember being in a room on Anderson University campus with tears in my eyes that night, because it was like I was giving up everything that I had built my life on and thought that was going to be the centerpiece for the rest of my life. I just tore it down and said, I can't hold on to this anymore. And I started down a new road. And that road was about me finding answers. That was the goal. I wanted the answers. And I just wanted to let the answers be whatever they were going to be, without any preconceived notions. I don't care what it is. I just want the truth. And so I started searching. And that part of my life, the searching part, is about 20 years long. So I'm going to sit down, and we'll take a few hours and just go through it, right? I'll try to highlight and be quick and brief. But that time was, I went back to school. And I loved philosophy. I ended up being a philosophy major in school. I didn't finish at Anderson. I took a couple years off and finished my degree at IUPUI in philosophy. Went to grad school for philosophy. Thought, well, maybe I want to teach. Maybe I want to teach this and study this for my living. Decided I didn't want to do that in the middle of the master's program that I was in. So I finished all the coursework for the master's and did not finish the last two comprehensive exams. So technically, I do not have a master's in philosophy, but I did the work. And I loved it, and I'm glad I did it. I decided I didn't want to go down that road. Okay, what next? Well, music, right? I mean, that's always the obvious choice that anybody who knew me came up with. Well, you need to be a musician. That's what you've always done. You've been singing in church since you were 4 years old. I decided, okay, I'm going to really focus on the music, and I started playing more gigs. And like Cliff said, you know, we would play together, and I enjoyed that, and I found joy in all those things. I loved learning and studying, and I loved making art and music, and so I focused on that. And during this time, I started having a family. I met my wife, and we started having kids, and And I really got into the place where I got to figure something out. And I decided, well, I'm gonna go all in on this music thing. Only problem with that is, like I said, I had a family. And I didn't think my wife was going to be too into it for too much longer to keep playing those $26 gigs that Cliff talked about. So I had to figure out how to get from my music career from here to here, like, fast track. And I didn't watch singing shows back then. I don't watch singing shows now. But I had seen a couple of episodes, or at least partial episodes, of The Voice when it first came out. And I thought, well, this is kind of cool. They got the chairs turned backwards, so it's more about The Voice, or at least theoretically that's what the image is supposed to be. I thought, well, if I was ever going to do one of these shows, this would be the one I would try. And that kind of, by necessity, turned out what I had to do. Because for the American Idol thing, I think you can't be older than 28. And I was much older than 28 at that point. I was 37, I think, when I auditioned for The Voice. So I went and did one of those open call auditions. I sat in a stadium and waited my turn. I was one of the last people to go in. And of course, I made it through and did the whole audition process and got through the whole show and won the whole thing, amazingly. What are the chances? You know, I saw some pretty phenomenal singers who didn't make it through very far at all. So there's certainly a little bit of luck to it, right? But it happened. And it opened up a lot of doors for me. I mean, right after The Voice, I flew to New York, and I got to sit in with The Roots on The Tonight Show and sing some songs with them. That was pretty amazing. And I got to headline Indie Jazz Fest. And during that time, I got to get on stage with the funk saxophone legend Maceo Parker and sing a song with him, which was crazy. And I hosted Yuletide Celebration with the ISO, with Maestro Jack Everly, and I mean, I did a wedding in Indonesia that was like the most ridiculous wedding I will ever be a part of, and that maybe anybody has ever been a part of. It's like this textile tycoon from Indonesia whose son was marrying Miss Indonesia, and it was like in Bali with like an orchestra and just insane, like, so a lot of stuff happened, and I was doing all the things, right? Like, I full success or whatever. And the thing that people don't know, until I tell you, is that those few years right after The Voice were kind of the lowest point that I've ever been at. And that's for multiple reasons. There were a lot of things going on for me at the time that were tough. But a lot of it, I think, had to do with the fact that supposedly I had arrived. But I hadn't. I wasn't fulfilled. Like, here, I went all in. I was like, okay, let's do this thing. Let's look for truth and joy here. And I didn't find it. And all the while, during all this time, I was still doing my brain thing, right? I was still studying and reading the books and learning about this philosophy of religion and this thing and what does this guy say and what does this lady say and who, and thinking through the questions. And I just hadn't arrived anywhere closer to where I wanted to be or thought I wanted to be. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, it came to a point where I just had no answers, nothing to hold on to, and I just felt like everything seemed so dark, and I was just drifting on the ocean alone, and just this point of, like, I don't know where to go from here. I don't even know how to get anywhere from here, and I was just lost. And I was in a pretty deep depression for months. And this is 2018. I came out of that slowly. And when I was kind of in a little bit of a better place, I had this experience one night where I was walking through my kitchen, which is, useless information about the experience, but for some reason that's really vivid in my mind. I can picture like walking around this corner that goes through my kitchen. And I walked through there, and just this thought popped into my head. You're not ever going to figure this out, Josh. It's been 20 whatever years. Like, you've read the books. You're not going to read another book and it's going to be like, oh, there it is. I just needed to read this one. Like, you're not going to answer this question, and you have to be okay with that. Now, I thought that was my own little thought that I came up with. I question that now. I think maybe God might have had a little bit to do with that. But the thing that's important, and that I didn't even realize the importance of at that point, was that giving up, that surrender, that willingness to finally stop depending on my powers was so important, because it made me reachable and it allowed God to start working. And that's really the point where things started happening in my life. Because see, when I made that promise to God back at the beginning of this road that I set myself on, I said, all I want is truth, right? Remember that? Like, the promise was like, I'll make a deal with you, God. Show me what you are. All I want is truth, and I'll take it however it is. But there was a little unspoken caveat at the end of that that I didn't realize, that was, I just want truth as long as I can find it, as long as I can go get it and read the books and ask the questions and do all the work, and that's how I'm going to get there. And it took realizing that, like, no, truth is bigger than that, and you're never going to find it on your own. Once I let that go, that's when God was able to start working. So what's the first thing that happened when God was able to start working? Over those years, I had been reminded of a book. I was a huge C.S. Lewis fan when I was like 18, 19 years old, during that time when I was building up all my arsenal of arguments. C.S. Lewis is such a brilliant thinker and has so much to say about the rationality of believing in God and in Christianity, and there's a lot of good stuff there, and I ate that up when I was 18. And of course, when I became what I would basically call an agnostic, leaning towards atheism, I kind of stopped reading C.S. Lewis, understandably, and just kind of stopped. But occasionally through those years, I would have this little thought of like, maybe you should read that book, Surprised by Joy, by C.S. Lewis again. And I would just dismiss it and be like, why would I read that? I don't know why that's even coming into my head. Well, again, I don't know that was a thought that was put there by me. I have a feeling that God was prodding me along, and I just wouldn't listen because of my thick skull. And so I finally did decide after that moment. I was like, well, I'm going to pick that book up. I read it when I was 18, but I'm going to read it again. And I started reading it. I'd pick it up from time to time, every couple weeks, and read like a chapter or something, and just kind of making my way through. And he's a brilliant writer. It's beautiful. Everything that he writes is beautiful. So it was good reading, but it wasn't really hitting me hard in any way. I didn't really think that much of it. But the one thing I did realize about two chapters in is like, wait a minute, I'm not reading this book again. I've never read this book. And what I realized is I knew about it, but I didn't actually have that. I hadn't read it. And interestingly, that I had been prodded along to read this book, and I was always like, I don't need to read that, right? I had this false belief in my head that I had already read it. But anyway, so reading it little by little, one night I decide, all right, I'm just going to dive into this thing. My kids were asleep. It was late at night. My wife is a night shift NICU nurse. She was at work, and I was just like, I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to get through it and see what it's about. So started reading. And if you're not familiar with the book Surprised by Joy by C.S. Lewis, what it is it's basically the autobiography of the first 30 years or so of his life. From the time he was born, he was basically an atheist in his early years, converted to Christianity when he was around 30. And it's the story of his journey up to that conversion to Christianity. Now, as I started getting into the back half of that book and reading about his God approaching him and him really starting to realize, I can't keep pushing this away. I can't deny this. it started to really connect with me. It's like my story and the story that I was reading were just coming together, and it started to really hit me hard in a way that goes beyond anything I can explain. And I took a break from reading at one point, and I walked outside, and there was a storm off in the distance to the west, and I saw the lightning, and I was doing the thing where you count, right? One Mississippi, two Mississippi, wait, and the sound travels, mile per 5 seconds, so I got to like 25, and then I'd hear a little rumble of thunder, so like 5 miles away, right? And I just sat out there, the rumble of thunder, late at night, probably like 1 a.m, and I went back in, and I finished the book, and saw his conversion from atheism to Christianity, and how God had led him to this point. And it just, whew, I was so affected. I was so, like I said, it just felt like it was speaking directly to me. And now some people tell me, and I believe them when they say it, that they experience God a lot of the time as basically an audible voice. And I love that. I wish that happened to me, but I don't tend to experience God in that way. But that night, it was almost like there was a voice after I finished that book saying, go back outside. And so I did. And I walked back out on my front porch, and that storm that was 5 miles away was now 0 miles away. It was right on top of me, and it was pouring down rain and just lightning and thunder, and I was like, okay. I mean, I walked out to the edge of my porch, and I didn't know what to do. Okay, here I am. And I just thought, okay, I'm gonna reach out. And I just reached out into the pouring rain. And the second I got my arm fully extended out into the rain, lightning just lit up the world like it was daytime for a split second, and just the loudest crash of thunder I've ever experienced, and shaking the house, and I about fell backwards. And it was like this moment of, all right, it's time. It's time to give up all the wandering and all the questioning and all the searching. I'm here, and I'm real. And you know, it was just a storm. You could have seen that storm. Somebody else was out there. It's not like God made a storm for me. And you could explain it away, no problem. It was just a coincidence. But it didn't feel that way. It didn't feel like a coincidence. It rang with a truth that I can't explain away. And whatever that storm was for, whatever purposelessness or purposefulness it had, it also felt like part of its purpose was for me. God speaking to me. And I came to this moment to quote C.S. Lewis from that book that I'm telling you about, The Surprised by Joy. He talks about coming near to that point in his life, and he said, total surrender, the absolute leap in the dark was demanded. The reality with which no treaty can be made was upon me. The demand was not even all or nothing. Now the demand was simply all. And that's kind of where I came to. There were no other options. It was time to accept. And so I went to sleep that night with that in my head. And I woke up the next day, and I do lessons. I do music lessons a couple days a week, mostly high school and middle school kids, and I'll do singing or guitar or songwriting, whatever they want to work on. And so I went to my lessons, my last two lessons, last minute, both of them canceled. And so I got to leave about an hour early. I called my wife. I said, hey, I'm coming home early. And she was like, can you pick up some photos for me at the photo lab at Walgreens? I was like, sure. So start driving back, pull into Walgreens, go inside, and realize this is not the Walgreens that she orders photos from. So get back in the car, drive basically back to where I came from, the Walgreens that's right near my office. And as I'm getting close, the light starts to change. The sun has gone behind. It's starting to set, and it's behind these dark, dark, dark clouds. And all of the light, everything is just bathed in this eerie yellow light like I've never seen before. And I went in, and I like got the photos, and I came back out. And I was like, what is happening? And I got in my car, and I started to drive, and I decided to take a long way home. And So I looked to the northwest where the sun is setting, and you can't see the sun. You can see its rays coming out from behind these black clouds, and there's lightning coming down through those rays, and there's a rainbow in it. And I turned towards it and started heading north, and then I turned towards my house, and as soon as I got on the road that led to my house, fingers of lightning just spread across the sky over me, and I just started laughing. Like, come on, man. Like, all right, I get it. Like, I get it. You're there. Okay. Just this experience of just absolute awe. And again, like, somebody else could have seen that. You certainly can explain it away, but it just felt so purposeful in my life, like God speaking directly to me, showing me the reality that was there. And I got home, and I pulled into my driveway. By the time I got into my house, that whole thing was done. It was gone. If I had not had my last two lessons canceled, I would have missed all of it. If I had gone to the right Walgreens and not been an idiot, I also would not have seen it. But all of that stuff fell just into place so that for those 15 minutes that was happening, I saw every second of it. And again, you can explain it away, but I can't. It felt so purposeful and so intended. And so 2 days before that storm, I would have told you I was an agnostic leaning towards atheism. That day, after that was all over, I would have told you I was a Christian. And I don't know why. I couldn't quite explain it, but that's what happened. That's how God reached into my life. And so I began to think back to that initial calling when I was an 18-year-old kid, right? When the pages turned in my Bible. And I had to start taking that seriously again because I had never explained it away. I just came to a place in my life where I didn't believe in that stuff anymore. So I was like, well, there must be some explanation for it. But it started to really speak to me again, that calling that I received to go and tell people what I had seen of God. And so I had to start figuring that out. I just couldn't shake the thought of it. And so one thing I did is I went back to that scripture that stood out to me in the Bible that night, and I put it in context. And I want to read you both sides of that, the beginning of it, that came, what comes before, and what comes after, because that has become really important to me in how I'm trying to shape my life now and how I'm trying to follow. So Acts 26, 12 through 15, this is the beginning of Paul telling his conversion story. He says, I was traveling to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priests when at midday along the road, Your Excellency, I saw a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, shining around me and my companions. And when we had fallen to the ground, I heard a voice saying to me in the Hebrew language, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It hurts you to kick against the goads. I asked, who are you, Lord? The Lord answered, I am Jesus whom you are persecuting. So this big experience, right, a blinding light and a voice saying, you got to stop what you're doing and you got to change directions 180, right? That's what it took to get a hold of Saul. And something similar is what it took to get a hold of me twice, right? Once wasn't enough. God had to yell at me a couple times over the course of 20 years to finally listen. But we need that, right? We need that part. We need that the part of the Lord's Prayer that says the beginning, right? Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, right? The God who is separate from us, who's so much bigger than us, who's so far beyond what we can understand. We need that because we're not enough on our own. And God reaches into the world, reaches into the universe, reaches into our lives in different ways and pulls us. And we need those big moments sometimes. But if you get the big moment, and then you just sit there and wait and wait and wait and wait. Doesn't exactly work out, does it? Because it's a two-way thing that I think is, there's a mystery in how we work with God and how God works in us. the best of us is God in us, right? Like God has to come through us, but we have to do our part. We have to make ourselves open, make ourselves available, figure out what that means, and that's not always easy. But I want to read you what comes after what I thought was my calling. It's Acts 26, 19 and 20. So Paul gets his calling, right? God tells him, Jesus tells him, I want you to go and tell everybody what you've seen of me. And he says what? After that, King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision, but declared first to those in Damascus, then in Jerusalem, and throughout the countryside of Judea, and also to the Gentiles, that they should repent and turn to God and do deeds consistent with repentance. Like, the call came, and then he just, like, went down the road and was like, all right, let's do this. We need both of those things, right? It's a balance, and that's what I'm really finding, and that's really the hope and beauty that I find in the story. And when I look back at my own story, when I really start to try and put it together, it's these two sides. It's this part where I have to do something. I have to do some work, and there is work to being a disciple of Jesus, right? We have to actually go and give things up and stop depending on our own powers. But here's the beautiful thing. We are called to be nothing less than divine. We have every reason to strive for that. That's not arrogance. That's what we are meant to be. I mean, that's pretty amazing. That we have a reason to strive for perfection. Jesus said, be ye what? Perfect. Oh, okay, I'll do that. I'll get right on that, Jesus. I will be perfect, right? Jesus says, follow me, and they dropped their nets and followed him. Jesus says, follow me, and somebody says, well, I need to go bury my father, and then I'll follow you. And Jesus says, no. Let the dead bury their own dead. You follow me now. You do the work. You follow. You take the step even when you don't know what it's going to look like on the other side. But that sounds hard. Be perfect sounds hard. But on the other side of that is the all have fallen short of the glory of God. And the my yoke is easy, my burden is light. And the forgiveness and the grace, right? You are called to perfection. There's no way you're going to succeed. You are going to fall miserably short, and I have done what it takes to forgive you, and I love you infinitely, and I know the path that you're on, and I'm watching you all the way, even when you can't tell, even when you don't know I'm there. When I see a moment, when I see an opening, I will be there, and you will know who I am and that I love you. And that's what I see when I look back on my own story, that God was there meeting me wherever I was. And I think that's the other beautiful thing that we can put our hope in, is that God meets all of us. The path always starts right here, right from where we are. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you've done right. Doesn't matter what you've done wrong. The next step is always from right where you are. You don't have to do anything different. You just have to make yourself available and open to God to do what he wants to do in your life. And just take that step. I hope the story has been helpful for you. I hope that it's connected with you in some way. And I just want to say thanks again for letting me come and talk to you and not sing.